coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please don't call in unless we specifically ask for calls, because we have with us on the line Mr. Paul Williams and Dr. Paul Williams. He's actually been a professor. He is a consultant to the intelligence agencies, not only in our country, but certainly he gave a talk, I think it was just this last weekend, to intelligence agents who got together from across the world. He certainly is well known for his writings on Osama bin Laden, and of course his latest book, The Al-Qaeda Connection, I think is very important today as we see ourselves moving ever more rapidly towards involvement with increased violence in the Middle East. I mean, the idea anybody thinks our boys are coming home from the Middle East really doesn't understand. Everything points to the fact that I think we'll very, very soon be involved in one way or another with an expanded war in the Middle East. But without further ado, Mr. Paul Williams, thank you so very much.
My pleasure to be with you, Dr. Stanton.
Was that this last weekend you were talking there to the intelligence agents?
Next weekend, really.
Oh, next weekend, okay.
Next weekend, right. But I you're not too far off. I just spoke to the Indian Intellectual Society, my good friends there. Most of them are Hindu in New York City. It was a gathering of several hundred. And I spoke to several very, very concerned people, televised in Poland, too, over the last few days.
Well, I would think that everybody really should be concerned, and certainly everything. I mean, we know that India is arming for war, and Pakistan's arming for war, and so many of the countries in the world are arming for war. Why are they buying all these armaments? I thought we were going to move towards peace now that there wasn't any more communist threat.
It's incredible. I mean, things are, as you know, occurring so rapidly. The situation in Pakistan, for instance, you know, it worsens every day. The situation in Iran, as everyone knows, I mean, that's headed for an all-out war, which I expect will materialize within the next 30 days, and that will be very, very nasty. And of course, the situation throughout the Muslim countries, almost every place in the world, Indonesia, Chechnya, you name it, North Africa, Sudan, we are living in incredibly precarious times.
And of course, the thing is that, you know, in the past, while we could sit over here on the other side of the ocean, we didn't have to worry what happened in Europe or Asia. But now, with large Muslim populations in Europe and large Muslim populations in the United States, with an open border system. And one of the things I was amazed in your book, where you talked about how, you know, when people from Islamic countries come here, maybe from terrorist nations, and they're picked up by our border guards down there along the Mexican border, and they simply give them a slip to come back in a month. And can you believe these people, many of whom are Islamic terrorists, don't come back for their deportation hearings? That was an amazing thing.
Isn't that amazing? It's incredible. At last count, it was pretty close to 9,000 special interest aliens from terror-related countries like Pakistan, Afghanistan, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, Bangladesh, who traveled to Mexico, illegally entered this country, and were apprehended. I'm talking about 9,000 apprehended. How many weren't apprehended? You could multiply that by 3 to 5, and you'd be you'd still be low. The ones that are apprehended are put, since the cells are filled, they're put up in hotels, given hearing dates, and they never show up for their hearings.
We'll be back in just a moment with Mr. Paul Williams. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest today is Mr. Paul Williams, and Paul has actually he's been a professor, taught at a university level. He's been a consultant to the FBI, the CIA, to our intelligence agencies. He writes extensively, and probably there is nobody who knows more about Osama bin Laden and the world Al-Qaeda movement than Paul Williams. And of course, his latest book, The Al-Qaeda Connection, we are going to be carrying, because we think it's important that you know what he has to say. So, you know, we were just talking a moment ago about the fact that here we are faced with a world international terrorist movement. Our southern border is completely open, that and there's been at least 9,000 people of special interest, Muslim people, coming across our border that certainly could all be violent terrorists. And instead of being arrested, they're put up in hotels. They're giving instructions to appear in 90 days or so, or a month or so, for a deportation hearing. These 9,000 simply don't come back to their deportation hearings and fade into our society. And many of these are from countries that support terrorism. But if we have apprehended 9,000, Paul points out the fact that they're probably 4, 5, 6 times that many. And many of these people will be Al-Qaeda terrorists. So why are we doing this? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, the argument goes that without cheap labor, if we close down the border, without cheap labor, our economy would be in dire straits. We need somebody to pluck the chickens and pick the vegetables and to clean the houses. And if we didn't have that cheap labor, the bottom would fall out in the economy. That's really the guiding principle regarding the borders right now, and that's why little has been done to secure them. Unfortunately, by leaving the borders open, we're just leaving ourselves open for doomsday, and that's I believe that that's imminent. That will occur in the very near future.
And of course, as he points out in his book, there is all sorts of evidence that Al-Qaeda has been actively trying to get nuclear material. Because, of course, what they really want to do is destroy America. And they know that there's no better way to do it than by nuclear weapons. Now, they can't destroy the whole country, but they could certainly disrupt our economy. They could disrupt our financial system by certainly exploding one or two or... what is it? How many is it? Something like 7 nuclear devices that they want to explode at one time?
Well, they want to detonate nuclear devices within 7 major American cities. Dr. Stan, as you know, during the presidential debates, when asked what is the greatest threat facing...
Hold that thought for just a minute here, and we bring our stations on board. Well, Professor, should I call you Professor?
Call me Paul.
Right, I'll call you Paul. But he has taught as a professor at major universities, and he was just saying that during the presidential debates, and then I interrupted him, so you pick that subject up, please.
President Bush said the gravest danger facing the American people is nuclear terrorism. Senator Kerry concurred. At that time, in June of 2004, Vice President Cheney said that a nuclear attack from Al-Qaeda is imminent. The same warning was uttered by former Homeland Security Director Tom Ridge, former Attorney General John Ashcroft. It has been echoed by people like General Habinger, who's in charge of strategic weapons at the Pentagon. It has been voiced by people like at Harvard University, Dr. Graham Allison, who's one of the foremost counterterrorism experts in the world, who says that an attack is imminent and will occur in the very near future. It has been stated time and time again by everybody. Michael Schur, who is the CIA op in charge of the Alec file, that's a file on bin Laden, said that, yep, Al-Qaeda has nuclear weapons, yep, they're here, and yep, the attack will occur within the next few years. Now, coming from Michael Schur, and he said this on 60 Minutes, I mean, everybody listening to us should be standing up and paying attention. This isn't something really just being said by me. It's said by the President, the Vice President, Homeland Security officials, the Department of State. It's stated by every counterterrorism expert throughout the country. Bill Keller, the editor of the New York Times, looked into this matter, and he said the best reason for thinking that a nuclear attack by Al-Qaeda won't happen on U.S. soil is that it hasn't happened yet, and that's terrible logic. That's coming from everybody looking into this matter.
Well, of course, now you have researched this, you've studied it, and I was really quite impressed by the material that you had out there. And certainly, there is so much evidence that Al-Qaeda, for a number of years, not just since 2001, but long before that, was trying to acquire small nuclear devices. You know, we're not talking about a hydrogen bomb, but they're talking about a nuclear device that could be exploded in a major population center and create major devastation. So pick up the idea. What evidence is there that Al-Qaeda's actually been trying to do that?
Well, there's so much I don't even know where to begin. But let's begin with when he was in the Sudan. There was a testimony given in federal court in New York in 2001 by Al-Fahd, Jamal Al-Fahd, who was a key Al-Qaeda operative. He was called Confidential Agent Number One. He described how in Khartoum he purchased highly enriched uranium. This is going back now, Dr. Stan, in 1993. How he purchased, even at that time, highly enriched uranium from Pretoria for bin Laden. And he spoke about the laboratories that were set up in the vicinity of Khartoum in outlying areas to test weapons of mass destruction. When he was providing this testimony, this is what's interesting, he was speaking in federal court before the national press, before intelligence officials, not one word about what he was saying made national news. And he was providing this testimony. Well, we know from Al-Fadl's testimony, but we know that there was an agent by the name of Salam, Mahmoud Salam, who was the procurer, Al-Qaeda procurer of nuclear weapons. He made numerous purchases in the black market from 1993 to 1998 when he was arrested in Germany while purchasing highly enriched uranium and plutonium for bin Laden. He was extradited to the United States and he was incarcerated at the Metropolitan Correctional Facility. He made an attempt to escape from there. You probably remember this. He stabbed one guard in the eye and another one in the stomach. Sprayed hot sauce in the faces of other guards and almost made a getaway. But this guy was a procurer of nuclear weapons from Al-Qaeda. We had him in our custody. We still have him in our custody. He has yet to be interviewed by our leading intelligence officials. But going back to what you said, the proof is of Al-Qaeda having nuclear weapons comes. I could give you ten. Let me just give you one incident. Let's go to Ramallah. October 11th, 2001, an Al-Qaeda operative is arrested trying to enter that checkpoint going into Israel. On his back is a backpack. The backpack makes the Geiger counters go out of sight. The backpack is removed. It's inspected by Mossad. Mossad originally believes it's a radiological device and tested as such. But Mossad later reports, and this is carried by the United Press International, by Richard Sales, by news agencies throughout the world, it's later tested by Mossad, and it turns out to be a tactical nuclear weapon, a weapon that could have that could have done away with all of Israel. It had an explosive yield of 10 to 15 kilotons. This is an event that actually occurred, once again, October 11th, 2001, at the checkpoint at Ramallah. This guy had the tactical nuclear weapon strapped to his back. Now, how could anybody even debate or question whether Al-Qaeda has nuclear weapons? The proof has been given.
Well, now, of course, didn't Khalid Sheikh Mohammed talk about this, the plan for our listeners? Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was sort of the mastermind before the first World Trade Center bombing and the second World Trade Center bombing. And, of course, he was Ramzi Yosef's uncle, I guess. Under any circumstances, he was eventually captured, and at least we're told he's being kept secluded someplace. And what did he talk about the Al-Qaeda's ultimate goal was?
When he was arrested in Karachi in March of 2003. In the beginning, he didn't talk about anything, but the CIA and the ISI, that's Pakistan Intelligence, confiscated his computer. And on his computer were all these plans for an American Hiroshima. And this project was being spearheaded by bin Laden, al-Zawahiri, and a mysterious figure called Dr. X on the computer. after interrogating Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, they found that the CIA and the ISI discovered this very detailed plan to detonate nuclear weapons in seven sites throughout the U.S. And the plan was called the American Hiroshima, and it's still in effect. And several people that worked, this Dr. X, by the way, turned out to be none other than Dr. A.Q. Khan, the godfather of nuclear proliferation.
In the Muslim world, he's the fellow who built the bomb for the Pakistanis.
Exactly, exactly. And he's also the one that provided nuclear technology, as you know, Dr. Stan, to Iraq, or to Iran, to North Korea, to Libya, and to a host of other countries like Myanmar and even Nigeria and Brazil. Dr. X was the other person in charge of the American Hiroshima. Since that time, the CIA has arrested several scientists from the A.Q. Khan research facility, including Dr. Mahmoud and Dr. Majid, and they discovered that several of these weapons were in fact developed, nuclear weapons were developed by al-Qaeda for the so-called American Hiroshima and forward deployed to the U.S.
And so the question is, where are they? And of course, do you think our leaders have any idea where they are?
Well, you know, there was a Waziristan summit, and very few people speak about this. It was in Time magazine, it was in Newsweek, The Nation covered it. There was a Waziristan summit in 2004 that dealt with the next 9/11 attack. And one person was collared in Pakistan. His name was Al Masri, coming from this summit. And he, too, said that nuclear weapons have been forward deployed to Mexico and transported from Mexico across the border, which brings us back to what we were talking about in the beginning of this program, about the open borders.
And, of course, the question is asked, well, you know, if they have this, why don't they go ahead and use it? And I think one time you'd commented, well, they are very, very patient. They're not in a rush. Remember, it was 8 years from the first World Trade Center bombing to the second attack on the World Trade Center. It's only been 4 years since the second attack on the World Trade Center, you know, but they are waiting till everything is in place, till it will do the maximum damage to the United States. Would that be a fair assessment?
Exactly, Dr. Stan. And the people in charge of the, who have been even singled out by the FBI as the leading ops in the next 9/11, like people like Adnan al-Shukr Juma, who's the number one most wanted man in America right now. These people have all been trained in nuclear technology. Al-Qaeda sent Shukr Juma to McMaster's University in Hamilton, Ontario, where he was trained in nuclear technology for years, along with four other al-Qaeda ops. So these weapons have to be upgraded and maintained, and the people who are in charge of the next attack, unfortunately, are nuclear technicians.
Well, of course, it takes a lot of money to run something like that. Is bin Laden getting a fair amount of money out of the Afghan drug trade since we occupy Afghanistan and we're allowing the drug trade to continue there?
That's another. I have two nephews there, unfortunately, right now in Afghanistan.
I know, and I feel so sorry for everybody over there because we're going from war to war to war. And where was the outcry from the Christians and the Christian leaders of this country?
These kids are great kids, and you know, my heart and prayers go out for them all the time. But in Afghanistan right now, where they're stationed, the fields are red with poppies.
Right, and we do absolutely nothing about it. But you know, if we say what a terrible threat it is, and we don't try to stop the drug production, nothing makes sense. Paul, I mean, it's almost as if we live in a world gone mad.
We are living in a world gone mad.
Well, I think that with that thought, I think if you realize we're living in a world gone mad, then everything begins to make sense. Because if you're looking for logic, you're not going to find it. If you understand we're involved in a spiritual battle, and there are powerful spiritual forces out here that are energizing everything that is happening, and they are moving America and towards a war in the Middle East. We don't want to expand the war in the Middle East. The average American doesn't want to. And yet, of course, we're being given all the reasons why we have to go to war with Iran, and everything is being done to get the Iranians ready to go to war with us. And where is the outcry for temperance and reason? Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest today is Paul Williams' book, The Al-Qaeda Connection, talking really about the fact that the Al-Qaeda has been working for a long period of time to acquire not only the technology, in other words, the radioactive material, but the know-how and, of course, the engineering expertise to build small tactical weapons. And then what about these other weapons, these suitcase bombs? Are they a factor?
Well, Dr. Stan, during the Cold War, both the Soviets and the U.S. produced small tactical nuclear weapons. We used to call them Davy Crockett's in the military. They could be fitted into a backpack, especially for use by Navy SEALs. They could be used to blow up bridges. They could be used to really destroy strategic sites in a time of battle. But we developed them, and the Soviets developed them as well. A lot of them were used as mines. Some of them could be shaped into an artillery shell and fired from a 155 millimeter recoilless rifle or from a howitzer. We had all different types, and so did the Soviets, of these small tactical nuclear weapons. Some of them can be fitted into a suitcase for detonation. And it's a misnomer. People think that they're special suitcase nukes. They're really all basically small, portable nuclear weapons that weigh anywhere between 60 to 80 pounds. Most of them are boosted by beryllium, which means that they can have an incredible bang. A matter of fact, many of these small nukes have the same bang as the bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So they're small, they're compact, they're easily portable, and they're incredibly deadly.
Well, of course, would they still be functional after all these years? If they were built, back in the 70s or 80s, would they still be effective today?
The cores really don't go bad, and they have to be replenished now and then. But they usually don't have to be replenished for maybe 5 to 10 years. The triggers start to go bad in within 6 to 8 months, and they would have to be replaced. At any given time, these small tactical nukes would exude a temperature in excess of 100 degrees Fahrenheit. So it means that the weapons would be prone to oxidation and rust. So they require maintenance. And Bin Laden has been very much aware of that. That's why he has had on his employ former Soviet technicians from China, Spetsnaz technicians. And that's why he trained his own technicians. That's why he sent them to places like McMaster's University.
And so the big thing is that this is long-range planning to create a crisis here in the United States. And you can never defeat America if you destroyed 6 or 7 of our cities. But you could attack the very essence of our financial structure. And that, of course, could destroy the infrastructure of America because we're totally dependent upon that. Do you think that's his thought process to disrupt our economy?
Well, if one of them went off in a major American city, and it will happen, like New York, you can just imagine what would happen. One of them went off in Lower Manhattan, Dr. Stan. That wouldn't wipe out just a few blocks. That would wipe out the entire Lower Manhattan. It would exude a fireball that would have a core of 10 million degrees Celsius. It would disintegrate everything.
Hold that stuff right there for just a moment, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest today is Paul Williams. His book is The Al-Qaeda Connection, and I will have to admit it's one of those books that you can't put down. Now, I've got tens of thousands of books I can put down. We've got a pretty large library here. But this is one of those books. I got started reading it, and I didn't want to put it down. I wanted to read it all the way through because he draws you into this and gives you the background of this amazing movement of the terrorist world. And of course, Paul has been studying this. He's really one of the world's leading experts on this. And we were talking about this idea that they would really like to explode nuclear weapons in our country to disrupt our economy. And Paul was just saying, if we were to let off one of these small suitcase size nuclear weapons in Lower Manhattan, it would literally certainly involve millions of people. There are treatments treatments, however, for radiation illness. Very effective treatments, and of course they've been perfected by, in fact, there's about 2 weeks ago on CBS, they had a program on the company that spent $100 million to protect, to develop this treatment. And the Office of Homeland Security, which is wasting billions of dollars on all sorts of things, you know, giving money to a country, to communities out in the Midwest to buy, you know, bomb disposal units, you know, that massive bomb disposal units and things like that. But they will not invest any money. I think they're going to buy 100,000 doses of this treatment, which could save literally millions of lives. And when CBS 60 Minutes was saying, why won't you buy this and have it on hand? And of course, the people from the Office of Homeland Security said, well, we have to just take one step at a time. And the exasperated gentleman from CBS said, but you know, you have an attack and millions of people are going to die because the medicine is not available. What do you do? And the man's response from the government was, well, we take one step at a time. I mean, you could just see the incredulousness on the part of the fellow from 60 Minutes. And I think everybody should ask the question, why are we really trying to protect the American people unless there's another agenda? So pick up the story there.
Well, it's like you said, the one story about Homeland Security is more unbelievable than another. I got a call, since I've appeared on, I don't even think I'm exaggerating by saying 1,000 programs so far, you know, since my two books came out. And I got a call from a fellow newspaper man, somebody I work with from California. And he was in contact with several smugglers who, according to him, and I believe everything he said. I mean, I've dealt with him in the past, and his information is always on target. And he's an impeccable source. He dealt with several smugglers who brought over nuclear weapons from Mexico. I reported it to Customs. I reported it to my Senator Santorum. I reported it to Homeland Security. Do you know what happened?
Absolutely nothing.
Exactly.
And I think this is what our listeners have to realize. It doesn't make any sense unless there is another agenda.
Let me say this on your program as well, and tell the nation and tell Homeland Security this. My name is Paul Williams. I type with two fingers. I'm 62 years old. I can break into Homeland Security.
And I'm sure Al-Qaeda can as well.
Why? Come on. Absolutely. That is absolutely the truth. I can read all their confidential records, all their reports.
Well, let's not get too far into that. I want to keep you around so that you can be a constant source.
Well, I'd love to talk to them. But, I mean, you can tell, you know, like, that's the problem. They are all nincompoops. They're all incompetents, and they're all bureaucrats. They're politically appointed positions, and they are not serving the American people. And calling them to task, I think, is my patriotic duty.
Well, of course, I really believe that some of these people, many of them may be nincompoops, but I also believe that we are going to see God's wrath brought on America. And because any nation that's ever turned against God eventually has had other things done to destroy that nation. And has there ever been a nation that's been as blessed as we have? Has there ever been a nation that has turned against God as freely as we have? And of course, nothing is being done about it by our political or our Christian or our conservative leaders. Well, let's get back into certainly the situation that we face today. Apparently, there are some of these weapons here. Now, some of these left over from the Cold War, some of these suitcase bombs?
I don't think so, Dr. Stan. Colonel Luniv appeared before Congress, and he spoke about these weapons that were buried here. But I think by now that those weapons, I don't think that Bin Laden's relying on those weapons.
You think he's developing new weapons?
Right.
Apparently, it's not that difficult to construct one of these bombs, is it? When you have the right type of enrichment uranium.
Well, going back to 1968, shall we hold this thought?
Just a moment. We'll be back here in just a moment with Paul Williams. But his book simply gives you the background, all of the documentation of the fact that Al-Qaeda has been out there, certainly buying up enriched uranium all over the world in preparation for the final blow at the Great Satan. And what does the Great Satan do? Why, of course, when they get the Muslims from terrorist nations coming across their border, well, we turn them loose. Doesn't make really sense, does it? Thank you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Paul Williams. We're really talking about his book, The Al-Qaeda Connection, and of course, Bin Laden. Do you have any idea where Bin Laden really is today? I mean, some people say that he's living in Iran. Some people say he's dead. Other people say, well, he's hiding somewhere in a cave over in Pakistan. What are your thoughts? Do you have any real serious thoughts on it?
Dr. Stan, a Girl Scout troop could find Bin Laden tonight. I know where he was because I spoke to people at the Soldiers of Fortune convention in Nevada. That's a convention of mercenaries. There's a $25 million price head on Bin Laden. Every mercenary in the world gathers in Las Vegas every year, and everyone will tell you where he is. There are night lawyers that proclaim where he is that are circulated among the different tribes, the Pashtun tribes. He is in the northwest frontier province of Pakistan, in the Valley of Deer, D-I-R. He has been there since Tora Bora. I know where he is.
All right, fine. Then why don't we go in and get him?
Well, it's the same thing like we tried to hit al-Zawahiri a few weeks ago, and you know we firebombed the wrong dinner party, and he wasn't there. And as a result of that, of course, you have hundreds of thousands of Pakistanis rioting in the streets because the U.S. had attacked a site in Pakistan, and they looked upon it as an act of aggression. And if we do that again, it will mean the toppling of the Musharraf government. And that will mean all heck will break loose for us.
Well, I think the significance of the toppling of the Musharraf government is the fact that they have nuclear weapons. And, of course, if his government falls, those weapons then will be taken over by members of the radical Islamic movement. Would that be a fair assessment?
Exactly, exactly. Now we're not talking about tactical nuclear weapons. We're talking about strategic nuclear weapons. Weapons capable of not just wiping out a city, but wiping out the entire east or west coast.
And, of course, I don't think that we are that far away from something of that nature happening. And I think it's about time the American people began to wake up and understand that none of what's going on really makes sense today. Unless, of course, there are other forces at work, sort of an X-force or a spiritual force that is drawing us steadily, progressively towards this nuclear confrontation.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if people want to read a work on what's current, they want to read the right book, then all they need to do is read the Bible, and they will find out exactly what's taking place.
And I think, of course, that has to be a guide for all of us as we begin to look at what's going on and say, none of it makes sense. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and during the break, Paul and I were talking, and we're simply talking about the fact that Pakistan has not tactical nuclear weapons; they have strategic nuclear weapons, and of course, Musharraf, who is the dictator, military dictator, is the only thing that is keeping those strategic nuclear weapons from falling in the hands of radical Islam. I mean, the majority of the people there, and that's it, Pakistan, I believe, really have been very, very supportive of Osama bin Laden. There's strong bin Laden support within the military, and I think that it will only be a matter of time. I think there's been a number of unsuccessful attempts on Musharraf's life, and when he is deposed, why the radical Islam will have all those nuclear weapons. Do we have any idea how many there are?
Oh, well, at last count, there were 68.
And of course, they do have their missiles that they can.
And of course, ballistic missiles that they got from North Korea.
Of course, they are very, very accurate because North Korea got their technology from Communist China, who got it from Bill Clinton. So, I mean, you have to ask yourself, why in heaven's name would Bill Clinton turn over sophisticated technology to Communist China to give to North Korea, to give to Pakistan, and to give to, of course, to Iran and all these other countries? Why would we do something like that? And we're told, oh, Bill Clinton wanted, he got a $100,000 campaign contribution. And if you believe that, you're incredibly naive. What's your take on that? Do you think that there are some spirits of forces working behind that are motivating people to do things that just don't make sense?
Well, I think that the heart of man is incredibly evil. And, I think that there are forces behind it. But I think that we have become so decadent and so blind to, you know, the ultimate truth and you know, and divine law and stuff like that, that the things like that have occurred, and they have occurred as the American people have been in, you know, in a miasma, some type of a stupor. So I try to explain the presidents from Carter on up to our present president, many of their actions, they baffle.
And of course, Paul had commented just now when we were at the break, and of course in previous private conversations, that if you really want to understand what's going on today, you got to read one book. It's the Bible. And when you read the Bible and you hear about this great war that's going to take place in the Middle East, and you see it's being drawn into it, and none of it makes sense. But if you read the Bible, it all makes sense.
Now, who would believe this? That unless you're a believer. Now, you just think about it. If I spoke to you, Dr. Stan, if I were on a radio show like this 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, saying that we are engaged in a great religious war between the forces of righteousness and the forces of evil, and it's occurring in the Middle East, and it spells doomsday, who would believe me? No, it would seem so preposterous. Or if I started quoting things from the book of Ezekiel or in the book of Revelation, it would seem like I'm just quoting things that are very outlandish and incredulous, and yet these things have materialized in our lifetime.
Yeah, they certainly have, and of course I'm sure there are many programs you couldn't go on and make those statements today without being challenged, but fortunately this is a Christian program and we have Christian listeners, and at least some of them I think will be wise enough to heed what you're saying. But I think your book, of course, your book is written, you read the book, and I had no idea that you were an evangelical Christian, you know, as I read the book, because you're dealing with facts.
I am saved, so I know this, and I my family is saved. So, you know, we have Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. We proclaim that. So no harm can happen to us. So well, I know that. And anybody that's looking and reading listening to your program, reading the headlines, better take the message of Jesus Christ to heart right now.
Amen to that, because we're moving into the most difficult times I've ever seen. And believe me, I've been at this for 44 years now. I got started in 1962. And I can see this whole thing coming to climax. And of course, the thing is, we're not doing anything to protect our country from Al Qaeda. We're pretense. It's all smoke and mirrors. I mean, our borders are unguarded. We're not really trying to catch Osama bin Laden. We're not guarding our chemical plants. We're not guarding our atomic and nuclear plants. We are certainly, not doing all the logical things that you would do if you were really fighting terrorism. We're trying to convince the American people we're fighting terrorism, but we're really not doing it.
And the situation in the mosque. In the United States right now, there are 1,600 mosques. Over 1,400 of them are supported almost entirely by Wahhabists from Saudi Arabia. They're built by Wahhabists. They're supported by Wahhabists. Their activities are sponsored by the Wahhabists. They spout an anti-American rhetoric night and day. They support the jihad. So it's no surprise where the next attack is going to be coming from. It's going to be coming from these mosques in our very midst. For instance, in Brooklyn, there's a mosque called the Farouk Mosque. It looks like Dr. Stan, it looks like a pizza joint you would never want to go into. It looks like a bookstore that sells like the sleaziest types of books. The only way you would know that it's a mosque is the Arabic lettering right above the entranceway. This little storefront has raised over $24 million for the jihad. $24 million. This little storefront has sent hundreds of Al Qaeda of jihadists for training in Afghanistan and Pakistan. This little joint has shelters right now leading Al Qaeda operatives. The Farouk Mosque I'm speaking about at 554 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn is also the place where the first bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, where those plans were hatched. Nothing is done to survey that place, to conduct ongoing surveillance. When that was done, the Muslims, members of the Farouk Mosque, complained to the ACLU, and the surveillance stopped. But the FBI did note that weapons are moved in and out of that mosque on a continuous basis, and yet nothing is done there.
And of course, we have the imams, these radical imams, going into our jails, into our prisons, and trying to recruit people into this radical form of Islam.
The Muslims right now that are members of these radical mosques, 50% of them are African Americans, and out of those, the 50%, almost 40% have been converted in our prisons.
Right, and of course, if you're in the prison and you convert to the Islamic faith, you get special time off and special time off for holidays, because they get a lot of holidays, and they get special...
A month? You get Ramadan off. Not only that, but you get a special kitchen.
I know. Why would our prison system be doing this unless there were forces within our country that were actively encouraging the recruitment of people into this radical form of Islam that will, of course, be a source of nothing but a tragedy for our country?
Well, it's the situation. You could go from one instance regarding the to another. For instance, Robert Mueller, who is now the director of the FBI, appeared before the AMC, the American Muslim Council, in Washington, D.C., and he said these Muslims who are members of the AMC are the finest American citizens that he knows, that they represent model American citizens, that every American should look at them and admire them and do away with any bigotry that they have. Well, within 6 months after Mueller said that, these leaders of the AMC that he was praising, several of them were arrested as being Al-Qaeda operatives, and the leader of the AMC right now is in the slammer for aiding and abetting Al-Qaeda. So there you have it. So the director of the FBI didn't even know sleeper agents. Or in a sleeper agent organization when he was in the midst of them.
And of course, they've been working in this country going back really to the 1980s. Have you ever seen that video that Stephen Emerson put out called Jihad in America?
I did. I know Stephen, yes.
And of course, here, this is 1988. I mean, they were taking pictures of Abdul Azzam, in Oklahoma, calling for a jihad, blood running in the streets of America. They knew that in 1988.
Yes.
And
yes,
they actively suppressed that distribution through all of our television stations here in America in 1994 when it was released. It wasn't available then until after the September 11th attack. And you have to ask yourself, why would that be? Why would they suppress information about the radical Islamic terrorist movement in the United States?
Well, Dr. Stan, why would the President of the United States stand before the American people and say that Islam means peace? I mean, Islam from the get-go has never meant peace. When the Prophet died, that religion spread throughout Northern Africa, as you know, throughout the Middle East, throughout Italy, throughout Spain, all the way up through the Pyrenees. They were driven back by Charles Martel in the 8th century. And then they came back again in the form of the Crusades, and they were driven back again. I mean, the entire history of the Islamic people is a history of warfare. It was never a religion of peace. The Prophet Muhammad engaged in numerous battles. He killed people in battle. He advocated violence. And for Bush to say something like that, I mean, and he continues to say that, to mouth that mendacity. And, every time that I hear it, I bristle.
How about that line, we all worship the same God?
Oh, jeepers, cats. I mean,
anybody who knows anything about Islam realizes that they don't worship the same God that we do. They worship Allah, who is the moon god. And it has nothing to do with the God of the Bible. So why would the president say that? He must have an awfully poor speechwriter.
Or somebody, unfortunately, they know nothing about Islam at all. They've never read one surah from the Quran. They know nothing about Islamic history, and yet they spout these things off as though they're Islamic scholars.
Well, anyway, of course, you're anticipating that there will be a war in the Middle East here in the very, very near future?
There are over 300 sites in Iran right now that are involved in the making of Iran's centrifuge technology to produce their nuclear arsenal. That's taking place right now. So, Dr. Stan, when, and this is going to occur very soon, when we have to take out these facilities, we're going to be bombing at between 200 to 300 sites in Iran. Can you imagine the outcome of that?
Well, of course, I think it'll flame the entire Islamic world, but I think that the basis of American foreign policy is do everything we can to inflame Muslims throughout the world in intense hatred of America. I mean, we've been working at this for a long period of time. Everything we're doing is to get them mad at us and to get us mad at them, and it almost looks like somebody wants a third world war.
You know, if you even go back to the Iran-Iraq war that erupted right after in 1980, that are, you know, right after the hostage situation, we had Iran and Iraq, we had the Ayatollah and Saddam Hussein engaged in this, in the fiercest war of the 20th century, that ended up, as you know, killing, you know, over 1 million people, and it lasted for 9 years. Why didn't we just sit back and let them go? Why didn't we just sit back and let them go? But no. What we had to do is, first of all, we had to support Iraq. So we supported Saddam Hussein with all types of weapons, all types of benefits, all types of military equipment. And then in the midst of the war, guess what? We decided to sell arms to Iran. I mean, think about it.
Well, I've talked to a special forces man who actually assigned to help Saddam Hussein with the chemical weapons he was using on the Iranians, of course, in violation of all the weapons, all the laws of international warfare. An American special forces soldier assigned to Iraq to help them kill the Iranians? What sort of madness is that? We're selling weapons to the Iranians to use against the Iraqis?
Yeah,
that's rather immoral, isn't it?
The point is, and I'm just saying amen to what you said, Dr. Stan, why didn't we just sit back? I mean, that was like an ideal situation for the U.S. at that time. I mean, just sit back and let them kill each other. But no, we had to meddle in the affairs, right? You know, and it made absolutely no sense. And then when Saddam Hussein was taking over Kuwait, what were we doing there? Why were we so involved in that conflict?
Well, of course, I think we hear the president talking about we have to bring democracy to Iran. Well, they had a democracy in 1953. They elected democratically a man named Mossadegh, the prime minister.
Yes.
And we toppled his government.
We toppled his government. We reinstated the Shah, as you know. Yes.
And then in 1979, we got rid of the Shah. We brought in the Ayatollah. And what sort of madness is this? And I think it's called, balance of power. You know, you want people there, you want conflict, and get the people fighting one another, and then you can control both sides.
They want democracy. We're according to the Bush administration, we're fighting there to bring about democracy in the Middle East. Well, you can see what democracy in the Middle East has produced so far. The present Iranian government that was elected in January of 2005, the first thing they did was form an alliance with Iran. Secondly, we see the democratic fervor and how it came to fruition in Palestine with Hamas. And you're just speaking about the Ayatollah. That was the democratic process in Iran. So, if we're in favor of spreading democracy, we better watch out. What we're trying to foster, especially in the Middle East, because we're creating monster after monster after monster.
In fact, in Egypt, they recently had an election. Now, they outlawed the Muslim Brotherhood, and yet they still won 30% of the seats. They had a free election, they would have won the whole Egyptian government. And these, of course, Muslim Brotherhood is just like Hamas and just like the Iranians, a part of this radical Islamic movement. And it seems that everything we're doing is to antagonize the Muslim world and drive people into this radical form of Islam, which really did not exist, until recent years.
Well, yeah, until absolutely. The real flame of radical Islam, of course, came about with the Ayatollah. And once again, we were involved in that, you know, right from... I remember Andrew Young, our ambassador to the UN, hailing the Ayatollah as a saint. Do you remember that?
Yeah. In fact, people don't understand. We were instrumental in helping the Ayatollah come to power. But people aren't old enough to remember that sort of thing.
And the Shah, of course, was our best friend. You know, as a matter of fact, Jimmy Carter was toasting him as the greatest American ally. This is about 6 months after Carter made an alliance with the Ayatollah.
I remember that time. And thinking to myself, why would we have toppled the Shah of Iran, who was our friend, and brought into power the Ayatollah, who was our enemy? And in 1979, none of this made sense. Today, as I look back, I say they were very, very smart. I believe we have created the best enemy that money could buy. Our guest is Paul Williams. His book, The Al-Qaeda Connection. We carry the book if you'd like to get it. That's The Al-Qaeda Connection. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and we'll be back in just a moment. Paul, we've just got 3 more minutes before we let you go. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Paul Williams, and I always enjoy having him on as a guest because, of course, he's coming from an evangelical Christian point of view, and he recognizes the spiritual forces that are at work, certainly there. What can we do? I mean, you're suggesting that within 30 days, more or less, why we'll be expanding the war in the Middle East. What can the average individual out here listening to this sort of program do at this time? Because it appears that our government is intent upon expanding the war in the Middle East. Doesn't matter what the American people want. Doesn't even matter what Congress wants. They're going to go for it.
Well, it's very difficult to... I would say that what we have to do right now is we have to be concerned about the homeland. We have to be concerned about the sleeper agents in our midst. We have to be concerned about these radical mosques. And anybody that has a voice should be contacting their elected representatives about these problems, you know, to secure the borders, to make sure the cargo coming into this country is inspected, to address the problem of these mosques that are supporting and fostering radical Islam. I mean, we still have the Smith Act. We still have the Voorhees Act that we can bring into effect to address these problems. And that has to be done. The president, if he's really at war, has to declare war. And that has to be declared by Congress, of course. But then the War Powers Act comes into that will at least permit us to protect the homeland. And that's all I'm concerned about right now. What's taking place in the Middle East is, I mean, that has been fostered for decade after decade after decade. And I think Iran is going to be nuclear capable. They are going to be coming at us. Pakistan, the mullahs will take over the Musharraf government. They will be coming at us. And we have to be ready.
Well, of course, the other thing is, what about the sleeper agents here who would love to destroy this country?
And that's, they're, according to Sheikh Kabbani, who appeared before Congress, he's a Muslim, speaking to Muslims, appeared before Congress in 2001. He said, look, I'm talking to you as a Muslim. I visit all these mosques. There were over 5,000 sleeper agents here already. That was in 2001. Well, I think you can double that number now.
And I think that they're here. I think they're waiting till the word is given. I think that this is very, very well organized. And I think there are people who would love to destroy America. And behind that, of course, are the spiritual forces that we talk about so often, of course, and they have their agenda as well. Well, Paul, thank you so very much for being with us. I hope the book continues to do well, and we hope we can get you on again to our Saturday program.
Anytime, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye, and God bless you.
God bless you, too.
Okay, fine. Well, of course, our guest today was Paul Williams, and, of course, when we talked to him about what was going on off the air, he commented, the way to understand it is to read the Bible. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our program with Paul Williams, who, of course, is a professor. He is called in as a consultant by our intelligence agencies. He speaks to groups all over the world about his concern about Osama bin Laden and about Al-Qaeda, and, of course, the fact that there really are sleeper agents here in the United States, and they are preparing for an attack on the United States. And it is his contention that they do have at least small nuclear-capable weapons that they could use here. And when the word is given, and I think it'll probably be having something to do with the coming attack on Iran, everything points to the fact our leaders are intent upon attacking Iran. Everything is being done to inflame the Muslims against the United States. Everything is being done to inflame the people of our country against the Muslim world. Do not get drawn into this. We may not agree with the Muslim religion, but there are an awful lot of people out there who are simply being manipulated in the Muslim world emotionally. Somebody is inciting all these demonstrations you're seeing. Somebody's providing the Danish flag for them to burn on television. Oh, don't forget, you always burn the flag of the country you hate on television. Why? For its psychological impact on the people in the United States and, of course, in Europe. So we're being manipulated. Understand we're being manipulated. Understand that prophecy of Edward Bernay, writing in his book Propaganda in 1928, when he said, "We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested largely by men we have never heard of." They have a massive propaganda campaign here in America to get the people behind the coming attack on Iran. And believe me, when it's going to come, I hope it's not going to come in 30 days, but I think we are in one of the most dangerous times of our lives. And there really are. The government has allowed these Islamic terrorists to come in here. They're not preventing them from bringing in all sorts of weapons that could totally disrupt our society. So begin making preparations. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield. If you'd be interested in getting up Paul's books, we have his book, Osama, something it's called Osama's Revenge. Anyway, it's a book by Paul Williams on Osama bin Laden, and then we'll be carrying the Al-Qaeda connection. We have his book, Osama's Revenge. It's a good book. We recommend that, and we recommend his new book, his latest book. It's a real eye-opener. And then understand the spiritual battle. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. You need to get the books that will take you into the background of the truly world satanic movement. You need to get Blood on the Well, the story of Aleister Crowley. You need to get The Beautiful Side of Evil by Johanna Michelson, a book we carry, and of course our four-tape set on Aleister Crowley. Our four-tape set on the supernatural with interviews with Johanna Michelson, because behind, well, back of all that foes have plotted, back of all that saints have planned, back of the schemes of men and demons is a higher hidden hand. Warp and woof for heaven created every pattern good and wise, often perplexed by earthly standards, but good and wise in heavenly eyes. And understand that we are being drawn into a war, an expanded war in the Middle East that is totally unnecessary. You need to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy that rules the world. Three pamphlets, $9.95 for the three of them. Get them, read them, and then try to reach others. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to it 5 hours a day on the radio somewhere in America, 5 hours a day on the internet, 4 hours on satellite, 9 hours on satellite, on Telstar 5, or on 3 or 4 satellites. We would appreciate your help, because it's an expensive proposition, but if we don't reach the people, who will? And if not now, when? So join us in this epic struggle for the survival of Christian civilization. And so, until we're together again, may the Lord be with you.